We thank God for this wonderful time of praise and worship. He is always so close to us, and our hearts are lifted up at this time. We are so filled with joy despite the given situation, because our God is with us, and we know He never leaves us nor forsakes us. And my dear brothers and sisters, as I was preparing this teaching, Proverbs 3:5-6 came very strongly. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not rely on your own insight. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will make straight your path. You know, my dear brothers and sisters, this pandemic has created so much of chaos and confusion in the world around. There is so much of misunderstanding, misinformation being spread left, right, and center. And most of us are confused what to do, what not to do. The other day, there was a message that came out saying, put lemon drops in your nostrils. Put lemon drops in your nostrils and, it will prevent COVID. And people have actually landed in the emergency room because they did just that. So my dear brothers and sisters, please be very careful when you try and follow all these things. And that's why the wisdom of the Lord is most important at this time. This pandemic has created a lot of havoc, not just in the young people, but especially in the lives of the elderly, the senior citizens. And my dear brothers and sisters, as you know, as people retire, they slow down with age, they have aches and pains. I'm still younger, but I still have aches and pains. So it's not just about the elderly. Young people have aches and pains too. Okay. But the elderly are more susceptible to the aches and pains, different diseases that they go through. And they're facing a very difficult time with this situation. In fact, with the lockdowns and the restricted movement, most of the elderly, even those who were relatively active, have been kind of housebound for the last over 1 year. My own mother has not, stepped out of the house for over a year. And many are feeling the loneliness. They're feeling the frustration of being locked up in the house. Their aches and pains are getting aggravated because there's not much physical movement. We don't have such large houses that we can really, have a good walk, even if we walk around in them. And most of us, my dear brothers and sisters, know many in our buildings, in our societies, in our areas, where there are elders who are either living alone, either widows or widowers, or there are couples who either don't have children or whose children are living abroad and they are left alone. And my dear brothers and sisters, the Lord is calling each one of us this evening to take care of one another. The word of God tells us in Acts 20:35, "In all this I have given you an example, that by such work we must support the weak." So whether a person is weak emotionally, physically, spiritually, we are called to support them. In Leviticus 19:32, it says, "You shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord." My dear brothers and sisters, how our children treat our elders depends on how they observe us treating them or speaking about them behind their back. I know sometimes very young children make fun of their grandparents, and parents think it's very funny. But in fact, we're teaching them the wrong things. And 1 Timothy 5:1-4 says, "Do not speak harshly to an older man, but speak to him as to a father, to younger men as brothers, to older women as mothers, to younger women as sisters, with absolute purity. Honor widows who are really widows. If a widow has children or grandchildren, they should first learn their religious duty to their own family and make some repayment to their parents, for this is pleasing in God's sight. And in verse 8, it goes on to tell us, and whoever does not provide for relatives, and especially for family members, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You know, I remember when we had gone to Canada, there was this lady who traveled with us, and she was a senior citizen, and she told us that when she was in Bombay, she had a lovely house, she had her friends, she had, you know, everything. She was managing very well on her own. And then her daughter, her only child, told her, "Mommy, why are you living in Mumbai alone? You know, sell everything, come and stay with me in Canada." And this lady thought, how nice of my child to do that. So she sold everything and went there. And when she went there, she realized what a lonely life she had. Her daughter and son-in-law would just go out of the house without telling her where they were going. The grandchildren would just slam the door in her face, would not even talk to her. And she was like an alien in that house. And she was so miserable out there because they were staying very far from any public transport. So she couldn't even get out on her own. She depended on her daughter and son-in-law to take her anywhere. And this was such a miserable existence. And James 1:27 tells us, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to care for orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. My dear brothers and sisters, I'm sure every one of us knows at least one senior person or a senior couple who are living alone. They either don't have children or their children are living overseas. What are you and I doing to help them out in this difficult time? It's a very good question we need to ask ourselves. Now, some of you may say, but these people have not asked us for help. Now, there are many reasons why a senior person may not want to ask you for help. One is they're very independent. They've been independent all their lives. They've done things for themselves. They've taken care of their children. They may have even taken care of their grandchildren. And sometimes they don't like to admit that they can't manage on their own. They don't like to feel old, because once you tell somebody, you know, I can't do my own work, it's like admitting I'm old, I'm useless. Another thing is they don't want to be a burden on other people. I know many people say, you know, I need something, but, you know, I don't want to trouble my neighbors. How many times am I going to tell that my neighbor's son to go and get something for me, you know? And another thing is they may just be resigned to their fate. Like, this is what the hand that God has dealt me, and I just have to live with it and manage on my own. Now, before we get to what we can do for all these people, there is one key requirement to help anyone. And that one thing is love, my dear brothers and sisters. Without love, nothing works. If you're doing things out of an obligation or, you know, because you think it's just the right thing to do, the person will feel it. Nobody wants to feel like they're a beggar, they're a charity case. So whatever we do for our neighbors, for our friends, for anybody we know, we have to do it with love. And the beautiful story that Jesus told us, the parable of the Good Samaritan, we all know that parable, you know, backwards and forwards. We've heard it so many times in our lives. But there are some things we need to remind ourselves about when we're, you know, thinking about helping other people. The first thing is love is proactive. In the parable, the Samaritan saw the victim and he went to him. The Samaritan was obviously going somewhere else, but he stopped when he saw the condition of the man. You and I, my dear brothers and sisters, are so caught up in our own lives, in what we need in this world of survival, that we may sometimes not even realize that there are people who need help. And some of the help may be very small things. You know, it's not something that's very big that needs to be done. Sometimes it's a very small errand. But there is some need for us, and we need to be more aware of what is going on around us. We need to be proactive. We see so beautifully when our mother Mary heard that her cousin was carrying a child in her old age. She rushed to help her. She didn't think of her own pregnancy, but she rushed to Elizabeth's aid, knowing that a pregnancy in old age would probably be a difficult one. And also that Elizabeth did not have servants to look after her and her household, you know. So she proactively went. Elizabeth didn't ask for help. The second thing we see, love is observant. One of the first steps of being a good neighbor, of being a good friend, of loving others, is noticing things, you know. The Samaritan saw the hurting man. As he traveled, he saw him and he took pity on him and he went and bandaged his wound. Now, granted that, you know, an injured man like at the side of the road would not be something that you could possibly ignore. You would have to see it. But sometimes we see things, but it doesn't register in our mind. I know my mother always tells me I walk with blinkers on sometimes because I don't see, you know, people around me, or I'm not paying attention and I don't realize that somebody is there, you know. So we all need to be more observant. We need to see things. Again, in the case of the wedding feast of Cana, we see there were many people at that wedding, but only our mother Mary noticed that there was a problem. Probably the steward had gone to the bridegroom and shared the concern that, you know, they were running short of wine, and there must have been worried faces in the family wondering what to do and what a shame it would be, and, you know, to have a wedding where the wine has run out. And so we see that she was very observant of what was going on, and then she did something about it. The next thing we notice is love is compassionate. When the Samaritan saw the injured man, he went to him and responded to his needs. He bound up his wounds. The word compassion literally means to suffer together, to suffer together. Sometimes it's not possible physically, but definitely we can offer emotional support. We can offer a shoulder to cry on for people who are hurting or need our helping hand. It is a feeling that arises when we see somebody suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. It's not just about seeing and understanding. It's about wanting to relieve the person's suffering. The next point we notice is love is responsive. When the Samaritan saw the man, he responded immediately. He bound up his wounds using whatever resources he had. Now just imagine he was going somewhere, probably on work, and he sees this injured man. I doubt he would have had any, you know, a medical kit with him. But he has some oil and some wine, and he poured them on his wounds and bandaged them up with whatever cloth he possibly could have. The next point we notice, love is costly. When the Samaritan tended to the victim's wounds, he gave his own resources. And one of the best resources and most expensive resources we have, my dear brothers and sisters, is our time. The Lord can restore our health. The Lord can restore our wealth. The Lord can restore families. But the one thing the Lord cannot give us back is time. Once it's gone, it's gone. Okay? So giving our time to somebody we love is the best form of showing our love for this person. And we see that not only did it cost the Samaritan 2 days' wages, but it cost him his time. He spent time looking after him. The next thing we see is love is inopportune. It is difficult. Imagine the Samaritan lifting this injured, bleeding man with no clothes onto his donkey. Probably the man was going in and out of consciousness. And you know how difficult it is to move a person who is semi-conscious. Even to move one side of the bed to the other is so difficult. And here he had to lift this man from the ground and put him on the donkey. So it is definitely not easy. It is definitely not convenient. It is very inconvenient at times. But he still did it. The next thing we see is that love is healing. After the Samaritan bound his wounds, he continued to take care of him at the inn. He looked after him for the rest of the day, and it is only the next day that he left him and went ahead on his work. The next point we notice, love is sacrificial. The Samaritan gave money to the innkeeper, approximately 2 days worth of earnings. Yet he also gave him instructions to take care of him no matter what the cost, and he would come back and reimburse him for whatever else he spent on this person. How much have we sacrificed for people we love? We may have sacrificed for our own children. We may have in small ways sacrificed for our parents. But for strangers, I really wonder, people in the outside world, I really wonder. The next thing we see, love is communal. It's not always possible for us to do everything on our own. So we see in this parable, the man took him to the inn and left him in the care of the innkeeper and told the innkeeper to take care of him no matter what the cost. So sometimes, my dear brothers and sisters, we need to involve other people when we are reaching out. The next thing is love is promising. Love sees things through to the end. And we see that the Samaritan left this injured man with the innkeeper and told him they promised to return and repay him whatever extra money he would spend on this man. Are we willing to do that? And the last thing we see, my dear brothers and sisters, is love is merciful. When Jesus asked the expert in the law, the lawyer who had come to question him and to trap him, which of the three people you think was a neighbor? We know there was the priest, there was a Levite that passed him by, and there was the Samaritan. And as I was reading through this parable yet again, my dear brothers and sisters, I was wondering, what if this man saw the priest, a person very well known, who was preaching from the pulpit, from the altar, teaching people what they should do and what is the word of God, and he just passes him by and does nothing. He also sees the Levite who knows the law, and he sees him passing by and does nothing. And I wonder if when he saw the Samaritan approach him and try to help him and, tend to his wounds, what must have been his reaction? If I was in his place, I would have been so surprised that this person who's a Samaritan, who I as a Jew would probably be looking down upon, laughing at, abusing. They were called dogs. They were called all sorts of names by the Jews. And here was this man coming to help me. I wonder what my reaction would be. But we realize that the love is merciful. My dear brothers and sisters, mercy is not just what God shows us. It's about seeing somebody without food and giving them food. It's seeing somebody who's lonely and giving them, reaching out to them in love. It's seeing somebody who needs a shoulder to cry on and being that shoulder for them. It's carrying the load. We know that Simon of Cyrene was forced to carry the cross of Jesus. But here God is calling us to voluntarily carry the cross, help somebody carry their cross as we go along. It will definitely help them. And we know, my dear brothers and sisters, that God has been so merciful to us. And we know the verse, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. My dear brothers and sisters, each one of us needs to be a good neighbor to somebody else. We need to reach out. This is the theme that God has called us to. He has empowered us to reach out. And there are certain things that we can do, especially in this time, to help people. As I said before, the elderly, the sick are feeling more lonely, more isolated, more vulnerable than ever before. They are feeling lost. They have lost their purpose in life. And this is really affecting them mentally, spiritually. So let's do a few, there are a few things that we can do. One of them is check in on them regularly, call them up, you know, don't be a nuisance and call them 10 times a day, but definitely keep in touch with them, find out what they need, send them uplifting messages on WhatsApp, you know, teach them to use WhatsApp first and foremost, if you can, you know, show them how to use WhatsApp. But don't let the interactions be too many in a physical realm because of the situation we are doing. You know, just send them little notes telling them you love them and you're thinking about them. Last week, Father Norbert said so beautifully about how, shared so beautifully about how the children in the school made cards and sent them with the dabbawalas to people's houses, you know. And maybe that's not possible because I think some of the dabbawalas have stopped giving deliveries now. But you can definitely have your children, you know, make little cards, do some drawing, and send them to the elders in your building or in your area. You know, it's such a joy for them to receive little presents like this. It may not cost a lot, but it's definitely treasured by elders. When little children do, especially when little children do something like this voluntarily, they just love it. You know, you can cook them some food. It need not be that they're starving, but just, you know, you're making a meal, just, you know, you think about them, send them some food just to say that, you know, we're together in this. And if a person has lost someone they've loved, because so many are in this situation right now, first thing, please don't ask them how the person died. You know, I know one of my friends was sharing with me, and I, through my own experience, know that it is the most annoying question you get. 100 people asking you, oh, but how did he die? What happened? How did he die? You know, and it, you feel like, you know, recording the whole sequence of events. And then every time somebody asks you, just playing the tape recorder and saying, you know, listen to it. So please, you know, don't do that. And another thing, if somebody has lost someone, keep in touch with them. You know, I noticed that very often, you know, the calls, the visits, the, you know, the contact remains for just a few days after the person has died. And then after that, there's complete silence. And that is when the person needs people the most. You know, you feel the loneliness, you feel the emptiness of losing the person. We know that our loved ones are in a better place, but we miss their physical presence, you know, around us. And so keep in touch with people long after the person has passed away. Another thing that you can do, my dear brothers and sisters, is call them up and pray with them. I know very often my mom and other elders who said, you know, when we were little children, we used to pray this, make this novena, or we used to have these certain set of prayers that they may not remember entirely now. So search for those prayers or those novenas and pray with them. I think that would be something that, you know, would lift their spirits in some way. Another more important thing right now to do is to run physical errands for them. You know, the shops are open for just a certain number of hours in Mumbai right now. And many other places there are lockdowns. And most of the elders find it very difficult to deal with all these apps, you know, and ordering things on the apps and making the payments and all that stuff. It's a very confusing thing for them. So when you're going to buy your own groceries or you are ordering things online, just check with your neighbors or those living around you if they need anything. I know sometimes if you ask you know, somebody, can I get you something, they'll say, no, I'm okay, I have everything I need, because they don't want to trouble you. But if you pose the question properly, saying, what can I get you, I'm going for myself, or I'm ordering for myself, what is it that you need, maybe they may open up and tell you what they actually need. You know, another thing is with their medicines in the medical sphere. I think many of the elders are not completely aware of what this coronavirus is. I know one of my friends saying his mother's around 80s, in her late 80s, and she has no idea about what coronavirus is or anything. So we need to make them aware so that they do not put themselves at risk. Don't tell, give them the whole, you know, picture of how terrible it is, but definitely help them understand to keep them safe. Make, you know, show them how they can video chat with friends, with others using smartphones, you know, help them understand technology. You know, they taught you ABC, and don't get annoyed and irritated showing them the same thing for the 100th time, because they have taught us, you know, A for apple, B for ball, and they probably told us the same thing 100 times before we got it right. So don't get impatient with them, and try and share some, maybe some easy videos of exercises that they can safely do at home, but be careful with that. You know, encourage them to keep in touch with their friends and family, to maybe write letters, because some people are not used to this digital messaging, but they can definitely write letters. Also, help them to keep in touch with their doctors. I know it's difficult to go for tests and to do all these other things, but there are many doctors that are offering telemedicine and helping people rather than a face-to-face meeting. Also, make sure that they have you know, emergency numbers that are easy to access for them, maybe on a speed dial on their phone, or to identify people in their area who they can call in case of an emergency. And most importantly, if they develop symptoms, you know, of the corona that we know of, please tell them not to hide. Because I know a lot of times, you know, we have, when we're living with a person who's older, we have to observe them, and they won't tell us themselves that they're, you know, something is aching, or they're not feeling too well. And we have to observe them and realize that they're not feeling well. So please get them to feel comfortable enough to call you or call a doctor if they're not feeling well, and not to feel ashamed of this disease. You know, my dear brothers and sisters, there are so many ways that you and I can do small things. Some of us, you know, think that if we are not a Mother Teresa opening orphanages or, you know, doing big things, that we cannot do, we might as well not do anything. No, my dear brothers and sisters, small things that are done with great love are greatly appreciated by the Lord. He loves when his children help one another. He loves when his children reach out to one another. He loves when his children are together, whether it is in a prayer group, in a prayer setting, or even at a meal, or, you know, together just enjoying each other's company. My dear brothers and sisters, you know, we always talk about the harvest is rich and the laborers are few. The Lord is looking for laborers to reach out to people in this time. I know there are many who are already doing it. You know, there are certain places where they're sharing certain things on social media of what is being done. But I think you and I, even if we're not part of NGOs or any big organization, we can still reach out to people in small little ways. It won't cost us much, but my dear brothers and sisters, I'm sure it'll make a great difference to the people who need it the most. So let's close our eyes and ask the Lord to show us ways in which we can reach out to the sick, to the elderly, without making them feel like they're charity cases, without making them feel bad about being helped. We all need help, my dear brothers and sisters, at some point or the other. And many people have touched our lives by the grace of God. God has used those people to touch us and to help us heal. Their words, their presence have made such a difference in our lives. When we have gone through difficult situations, and the Lord is now asking you and me to reach out, to shine light into the darkness of people's lives, to show them that we love them, that we care for them, We are Jesus' hands and feet, and we need to reach out, my dear brothers and sisters. We can't be comfortable in our own homes doing nothing. We're safe and do nothing. No. The Lord is calling us